Okay. There appears to be a small group. Anybody have any questions? Last time we looked at the differential equations of the form something was changing. Well, it usually was some amount, right? We use the letter A. And we were looking at accounts that were on their own growing exponentially by earning interest. And then we were looking at two kinds of situations. One situation, not only was the account growing exponentially, but there was a modification to that, where you were putting money into the account at some constant rate as well. And then the other situation was, okay, it's earning interest or something like that, but then you're also taking money out at a constant rate. And one way you can get a more qualitative feel for these things, besides, you know, actually computing and solving this, you know, for the solution, you can also make what's called a slope field. For example, this one. What the slope field looks like is you pick a bunch of sample points in the plane, and at each of these points, you just use this function here to tell you what the slope is. So when A is equal to 0, the slope is B, right? Maybe that's B. And then as A increases, this slope here gets higher. So these things get steeper. So these slope fields give you a qualitative feel for what's going on. And what's going on is really just shifted exponential growth. You can imagine continuing these down a little bit lower. into the negative A's, which doesn't really make sense financially. The negative account values, well, you're going into debt or something. But so what you actually get are exponential curves. They're just shifted. And the other case is actually some exponential curves, just with a different shift. You see, there's a certain positive value of A that'll make R times A minus B equal to zero. Actually solve for it. It's zero when A is equal to B over R. So that value the slopes are horizontal. And so last time there was an example where I talked briefly about how we imagined we had some retirement savings, then we started taking money out, and in the first version, the money would never run out. And that corresponds to when you're above this value here. As before, you get a greater slopes when A is higher. So the situation last time where the retirement savings never was going to run out because we were only withdrawing $1,000 a month or something. We had so much saved up and it was earning 3% interest. That corresponds to this situation where you're above this critical value and so it just keeps growing forever. But just as we have greater slopes when A is higher, we also have lesser slopes when A is lower. And the slopes actually turn negative below that critical point. And the lower we get, the more negative the slopes get. So the steeper the graph is going to be. So in these scenarios here, the solutions you get, these are the ones where the money ran out in finite time. That's what these kinds of curves indicate. The ones that are going down to zero. And mathematically, this actually continues, of course, into the negative numbers, although in the real world that may not happen. I guess that would correspond to having a line of credit or something. Deeper and deeper into debt. I don't think it would last long.
No, it always opens because I have my stupid sanitizer and it opens it up.
Sanitizer? Okay. So an example of this, for retirement savings, earning, let's say, 4%. That's the R, right? Earning 4% returns or income. And a withdrawal rate of, let's say, let's say we want to withdraw $40,000 per year. Okay. That's B. I guess the 4% is also per year. If you want to keep the account balance such that it's never going to run out of money, right? What you need to have it be at least this value B over R, right? That's the dividing line between money eventually runs out and money never runs out and account keeps growing, right? And in this case, we've 40,000 divided by 4% is $1 million, right? So that's not as precise as what we did last time, in the sense that I haven't done some question of, well, you know, how long does it take for the money to run out, or you know, how much do you have after 10 years or whatever. This is more the qualitative side of it. And your book also has some similar things. It has, at the end of this section, I think it's page 743. Yeah, page 743. It's got four other pictures. In the same spirit. What do they say? So, one of them is basically this picture, but with the critical place where the slopes are horizontal put right at zero. I think instead of a T, they use, or I think they use a T, but they, instead of an A, they use a Y. So the slope is given by something like this. I think they use a K where I use an R. And so you get the same picture. If you plug in greater values of A, then you get greater slopes. Other kinds of pictures the book have are about some other phenomenon. So, like here, we had a situation where there was not just exponential increase, but there could also be exponential decay. I don't know if I should say exponential decay. I guess I should say negative exponential growth. Right, getting bigger, but going large in the negative direction. That happens here too, but they may. But in this case, the B is zero, so it would correspond to an account that's say earning interest, but you're not putting any money in or taking any money out. Whatever it start, if it starts positive, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, earning interest. If it starts negative, like you're in debt, it gets bigger and bigger, but in the negative direction. Because if you take negative values for A and multiply them by a positive number K, you get some negative values over here. And bigger and bigger negative A's make for bigger negative slopes in this equation. And there's three more slope fields there. Some other situations. Now, I'm particularly interested in the logistic one. So, what's this logistic growth about? Instead of a simple situation of, as you go higher, the slopes get higher, or some kind of upside-down thing like exponential decay, as you go higher, the slopes get lower or something, it's actually a quadratic function. Use y's instead of a's because that's what the book is using. There we go. This is so you can do a little sign analysis on this thing.
there's a factor here that's zero when y is zero, and then the other factor is zero when y is m. So there's kind of there's three different regions of interest. So up high, I'll consider y is greater than m, and there's the boundary point, y equal to m. And in between, we have y is between 0 and m. Yes. And then 0 is equal to y. And then finally, we're at lower down, we have 0 is less than y. Now, when you plug in exactly 0 or m into here, you're going to get that the slope is 0 because in the first in one case it's just because y is 0, and in this other case here m minus y is equal to 0. So I'm going to make a little table here. When y is bigger than m, then m minus y has got to be negative because you're taking a smaller number minus a bigger number. So here, you have y being bigger than m, and so that makes it positive. But then m minus y is negative. Positive times negative is negative, right? So here the slope will be negative. Positive from the y. Negative from the m minus y. It will be some negative number. When y is between 0 and m, so positive but smaller than m, then m minus y is greater than 0. Bigger number minus a smaller number. And so here the slope will be positive because dy dt, the slope will be the k, or that's always positive, then you know y is positive times m minus y, which is positive. So that'll be positive. And then down here, I guess here m minus y is just m, but we don't really care because we already know that the zero factor will make the slope zero at y equals zero. Now when y is negative, m minus y is even greater than m now, right? M minus a negative will be even more positive. So here, dy dt is equal to a negative number from the y factor times a positive number and m minus y, so it comes out negative. The k in the front is positive, so it doesn't affect the sign of the slope. So the picture here is you have slopes that are going to come down, negative slopes, horizontal slopes, positive slopes, negative slopes, horizontal slopes. Another way to see the same thing is instead of putting y on the vertical axis, put it on the horizontal axis and graph this thing. it's a parabola. It has roots at 0 and m. So here it's positive, here it's negative, here it's positive.
Get that right?
No, I didn't. Right upside down. Yeah, because just by my sign analysis here, right? Plug in, say, half of m, it's going to be, and you'll get m over 2, right? So I find this one particularly interesting. So if you put, so again, see, here's the negative slope when y is negative, then horizontal slope, positive slope when y is between 0 and m, zero slope when y is at m, and then negative slope here. And if you make the curves, the solutions to this that go through the slope fields, now what you get, instead of just this one critical level, like here, or here, or here, now there's two critical levels. And so on the one hand, if it's negative, then you have exponential growth away towards bigger negative numbers. If it's higher than m, then you have exponential decay, essentially, down towards m. And in between, you have this interesting thing called a logistics curve. It looks kind of like an S, where it comes away from zero, kind of like exponential growth. And then it slows down and goes towards M, like exponential decay. Your book gives an actual formula for the solution in the middle case. You can get the solution using integrals, but it is difficult. I'm probably going to get the formula wrong if I try and do this one from memory. I don't use it often enough, because I'm not working in the social sciences where this comes up more. It's kind of complicated, but that's why it's this kind of S curve. So when if you start out near zero, the growth can be pretty slow at first, but then it'll speed up. And it'll be its fastest at halfway between 0 and m. And then as it gets closer to m, the growth slows down. And this is very handy for trying to express some
some kind of change where initially when it's small, the idea grows really fast. It's used to model the spread of things in societies, whether it's the spread of an idea, the spread of a disease, the spread of people adopting a new technology. It can also be used to model animal populations. The idea is, at first, you think of it as imagine some animal comes to an island, and the animal eats plants, and there's lots of plants to eat there. So the population grows really, really fast at first. So you've got exponential growth. And the more animals you have, then the more offspring they have. And so the faster the population grows. Until we get to the point where there's finally starting to be a difficulty in getting enough food. And so then growth starts to slow down, and we converge towards some maximum population that's sustainable, a carrying capacity, as you might call it. And likewise, you could imagine something like a new iPhone comes out, and at first, very few people have the new model, but then more and more people get the new model. The adoption rate goes faster and faster, but eventually you get to the point where most of the people that are ever going to buy it have already bought it. And so the adoption rate slows down and converges towards its maximum that it's ever going to be at. Or this could be a rumor is spreading, or a disease is spreading. Has a few exercises on this. I'm used to getting this thing from integrals, but they don't want to go through all of that. So they just take the solution that's given. Thank you.
entirely happy with
names and articles, but let's see.
I guess the main thing they're trying to do with their exercise on these is just kind of explore this these kind of solution curves. So in this one, this is number 95. It's about rumor propagation. So x is the fraction of x is the number of people who have heard a rumor out of a population of 400. What's their scenario here? If a resident of a 400-student dormitory hears a rumor that there is a case of TB on campus, then P, the whole population of this dorm, is 400, and then they have this formula here. And they think it's too hard for you to solve this differential equation, so they give you the solution. There is a kind of advanced technique that you need for solving this. It's called a partial fractions, which it gets taught in the second semester or the three semester calculus sequence. So that's probably why they're not making you solve it. They don't want to have to teach you partial fractions. So that's the solution. The initial condition is it starts out at time zero, one student knows about it and tells a whole bunch of others among the 400 people in this dorm. And the questions are pretty easy. How many people have heard the rumor after 5 minutes, 20 minutes? Apparently time T is measured in minutes here, right? Okay, so that's not terribly hard, right? Just plug in 5, plug in 20. After 5 minutes, 7 people know. And after 20 minutes, almost everybody knows. 353. What's going on here is the M that we had down here is now the 400, and instead of a Y, it's an X. And so we're starting out at 1, and so the curve is doing this. The next question is also
easy, right? They want to, what is the limit as t goes to infinity of x of t? Well, that just means, okay, what x value, and x is the vertical axis here, are we getting close to as t gets large? Well, that's the 400 here. To make this a little more interesting, what if instead of being given the formula, I gave you some data? And we tried to find a logistic curve that fit the data. This, I think, is a little more interesting. Actually having some data, and then trying to make a prediction, basically. Looking at this data, if you believe it's a logistic model, then what you'd probably be particularly interested in, what is the M? Where are we going to max out? So there are three unknowns, C, K, and M, and I give three data points. So that's just enough to solve it. Actually, in the real world, you may have more than three data points, and what you may find is that your data does not exactly fit a logistics curve, but it's not a problem. Because if it roughly fits a logistics curve, you know, if it's vaguely like one of those S-shaped curves, then there are ways of finding a best fitting logistic curve. This is logistic regression, as it's called. This is very useful if you have real-world data. You have your fancy calculator or Excel or your statistical software. Just find the best-fitting curve to your noisy data. If you believe it's a logistic model plus some kind of random errors or minor stuff that you're not modeling. Then you can't, in general, expect to fit it perfectly if you have more than three data points. But you just try and get the best fit you can. And what do we got here, though? Three data points, I think I could actually hit it exactly. So let's see. Plug in the three t values, 0, 10, and 20. Okay. So 0... Or sorry, 1 is the y value when t is 0. Five is the value when is 10. And 40 is the y value. And t is 20. So a system of three equations, it does look kind of hard, right? Let's see if we can make a little bit of progress on this. Do a little algebraic cleverness here. So I've got equations A, B, C. My trick here for making some progress is I will first I'm going to get rid of the fractions by multiplying each of these equations on both sides by the denominator of the right side. Notice that each of the zero is just one. So it's m over 1 plus c in the first equation, because it's 1 plus c times a 1 in the denominator. And then I multiply both sides by 1 plus c, and I get this. For this one, I'll multiply both sides by the more complicated denominator. And for the bottom one, I'm going to multiply both sides by that. The next one, right? The modified equations. Now, they're all equal to m, right? The right sides are all m, so the left sides are all equal to each other. you can have with two equations, you can get it down to two variables. So, for example, if I take this first equation here, I have C 5 plus 5C. And you can solve that for C. So what I will do is I will subtract this thing. So it will kind of, I'll subtract the 5C times exponential term from both sides, and I'll subtract the 1 from both sides. So I'll C minus 5C e to the negative 10KM equals to what? Well, I say subtract 1 from both sides, so 5 minus 1. And then this part here factors, factor out the C. So you actually can make progress. And then, what are you going to do with that? Well, you'll notice we already had another equation here, a pretty easy equation, 1 plus C equals M. If we want, we could combine that, please. And I think the challenging here, so big set of algebra. Is still an annoyance. I'd like that K to go away. I haven't really used the other equation here. I'm going to do that now.
there's a little bit more to it. I think that I've been trying to avoid it, but I think I'm going to make this all reasonable. I need some kind of a little placeholder here. Just make it a little easier to read. Starting to regret my decision to go into all this algebra. Subtract 5 from both sides, multiply by 1 minus 5u, and get this. Solve for u with a quadratic equation. C and then also and then look at say equation B2 there, but written in a different way. 5 times 1 plus C times U equals M. So, big chain of algebra. So solve for U, and then plug that in to get C, and then and we plug in the C and U solutions here to get M. Right? And so now you've got M, C, and U. And finally, if you want to also know K, you can get it now. See, this equation, U equals e to the negative 10km from right here. Now, this equation we can solve for k. We take the logarithm of both sides, then we divide by negative 10 and divide by m. So you can actually get everything, but I underestimated all the time involved in that. The solutions you get are 1 or 7/30 seconds if you plug into the quadratic equation. I just had my calculator get it and said, solve this equation. And, okay. Now, over here, we have e to a negative number, right? K and m are going to be positive. And so when you multiply it by negative 10, you've got e to a negative, right? And e to a negative something is going to be less than 1. So the solution is actually going to be the one that's smaller than 1. And then we plug this in for C. Says it will be negative 128/3. That works for m then. 5 times 1 plus negative 128/3 times u, which is 7/32. A negative number for m. Okay. Well, that wasn't supposed to happen. Now, what does it mean if you're getting a negative number for m? If you get a negative number for m, that means that your three data points don't actually fit on a logistic curve. They actually fit on, but they would fit on some kind of They would fit on the kind of curve that's basically the upside down version of what happens here. So what this is saying is that it's actually going to be, it's actually, this is predicting that there will be no ceiling.
That invalidates the
So in general, you can't just make up any three data points you want. They're not all not just any three data points will be along a logistics curve. No. If I had picked some different numbers, I could have gotten a positive n, and it would have been fine. Okay. Anyways, the algebra took longer than I thought. I don't think I'll make you do all that for your homework. Too elaborate. Okay. Let's see here. Something a little friendlier. Number 84. Here's an easier problem related to that, to this one. Kind of the sequel to 95 is 96. Easier question. How long to the nearest minute will it take for half of the group of 400 to have heard the rumor? Much easier. All you have to do is solve for t instead of solve for three things. Four, 86, 88, 96. Questions? If you didn't, I graded the homework for completeness if you didn't already get it back. And we will start looking at what's called definite integrals on Tuesday.